We'll call the meeting of the Agriculture Rural Economies Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Junkie.
Here.
Representative Welty.
Here.
Representative Finstad. Representative Doty.
Here.
Representative Faust.
Here.
Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hansen. Representative Heidgerken.
Here.
Representative Magnus. Representative Olin.
Here.
Representative Otremba. Representative Peterson. Representative Poppy.
Here.
Representative Schmansky.
Here.
All right, members and audience, reminder, cell phones off, or it's a dollar call, or $5 if you answer it. There is coffee up here. Anyone in the audience or on the committee that wants it, help yourself. Quick announcement, I think you're all aware, but if you're not, we're going to lose a very important member of this committee here in the next couple of weeks, Mr. Warner.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us what's going on in your life?
Oops. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to make you talk a little bit before you get out of here.
I will be leaving at the end of the month and going to the Senate, Republican Caucus, doing environment, energy issues, and capital investment. It's been a joy to be here for 17 years, but the opportunity came along and I took it.
Well, that's good. We're going to miss you. 17 years he's been doing agriculture issues. He remembers well before any of us sitting at this table. How long have you been here, Dave?
93, so 11 years.
11 years.
With agriculture.
And I know he doesn't outdo you two down there, so yeah, I think you got us all, Ed. And we thank you for that. I think, Ed, I will say we talked earlier, but I think we all agree that both Ed and Dave are both the bipartisan type of people that have always sat at this table with us. And I've never known Ed to write a letter to the editor against anyone or nitpick or do any of that. He's all business, as is Dave, and we appreciate that down here on the Ag Committee. So. Our loss is the Senate's gain. We'll miss you, Ed, but you're only down on first floor, or maybe even, I think they put them in the sub-cellar down there, so we'll try and find you once in a while and have a cup of coffee with you. So, all right, members, we have the minutes in front of us from February 14th, Happy Valentine's Day. Representative Olin moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. In your packets, member, you have, some of you or all of you have an organic agriculture report that was due to the legislature. That's yours. We're not hearing that, but it was to be presented, and the department wanted to make sure you all saw it and got it and took it back to your offices or whatever you want to do with it for the reading. I have a bill here I'm going to pass around if anyone's interested. It's. I think we talked about it the other day. We had a bill to exempt milk trucks from weight restrictions due to their federal food licensing a number of years ago. I actually carried it in Representative Workman's Committee then. It's one of the few exemptions we have, but it has to do with federal licensing. They can't unhook once they hook to a milk tank and come back and get it during road restrictions, or they risk losing their federal license. We actually put a sunset for June 1st, 2007. So this bill just simply removes that sunset and allows our dairy haulers to continue working exactly the way they have the last few years. So we're going to get that over to Transportation if we get in their omnibus bill, but sign on anyone who wants to on that. It's a pretty innocuous bill, but you can tell your dairy guys you're doing stuff for them, or your haulers especially. Representative Heigert and I actually went on a ride-along in your district a couple years ago with the first district trucks up there, so I know they'll appreciate that. Members, today we are going to hear an overview of the RFA, and then we're going to take up a bill that we have here. As you know, the RFA is out of money. I'm sure they're going to explain why that happened and how this will never happen again to the committee. After that, then we'll go into an overview of plant protection, see how far we get today. And lo and behold, you have packets in here. You're going to see we have pictures now, members. So this is going to be a lot more interesting. I expect all of you will stick around for this, as opposed to slipping out before when it got a little dry. So with that, Here at the table, we have a couple of people, Steve Ernest and Jim Boerboom, former Representative Boerboom, who is now the Assistant Commissioner. Welcome to the committee, and let's talk about RFA.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, Financial Management Director with the Department of Agriculture. Before we get, before Commissioner Boerboom gets into all the details of the RFA, I would just point out a few of the numbers in the budget book that pertain to this.
And members, you should have your budget books, and he'll give us a page and reference where we're at.
Page 56. This program in our budget is called Rural Financing. The bulk of the program is the Rural Finance Authority, but we do have some state programs, too, that aren't, the loans aren't specifically approved by the RFA board. On page 56, you'll see the services provided. The RFA is the first. We have a federal program, too, the Aggie Bond, and Commissioner Boerboom will get into the details of this, and a sustainable ag, which is state money, and corporate farm law. We also have the Best Management Practices Loan Program, which preferably passes through this activity in our budget. I just wanted to point out some of the numbers on page 58, then, which are a little bit confusing. We have $486,000 a year in the base budget from the general fund. This is to fund the RFA staff, the Aggie Bond Program staff, and Family Farm Services staff. The Clean Water Revolving Fund, $2.3 million, $2.8 million in the 2 years. This is money that comes through the Public Facilities Authority, PFA. This is originates with federal dollars for the clean water programs. This is for BMP loans. And then it comes from them for our BMP loan programs. This is a revolving program. So this is the dollars that we expect to go out. Miscellaneous special revenue, we get some fees for our applications. And we do have the Sustainable Agriculture Loan Program, too, which is a revolving loan program that was came from state dollars to begin with. Agricultural Fund, we have the state side of the BMP loan program and the ISTS, the septic program. Those are revolving loans, too. And then the RFA, you'll see, looks like a small number, and I just wanted to point out that this is some state money that is approved by the RFA. Commissioner Boerboom will go into the detail, but this isn't the bond money, the bulk of our activity. The bulk of our activity is funded by bonds, and the way the accounting system works is we keep that in the year the bonds were appropriated. So our last appropriation of $18 million was in fiscal year 05, and that actually doesn't show up on this page. So that's what I mainly wanted to point out. It's a little bit confusing on this page. And then the agency, there's just a couple thousand that is for our Aggie Bond program that we just passed through to the Department of Finance to handle that program. If there are any questions on the numbers, I can answer them. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to the commissioner.
Mr. Boerboom.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Boerboom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I do have administrative oversight of the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. I'll be working off a handout that should be included in your packets. It's a green covered sheet, and the title of the document says Minnesota Rural Finance Authority, Department of Agriculture. And, Mr. Chairman, what I'm going to do is just highlight three areas. Have the source of funds and the use of funds of the various loan programs that are administered by the agency. The second part is to highlight some of the locations and the activity we've had over the course of the 22 years since the program has been in existence. And then finally, just talk a little bit about how the program has maintained this ability to be user financed as we go through the years. Page one of the handout at the top really identifies three sources of funds that are used for the various programs by the authority. Probably the most popular loan programs that we administer are those programs called the participation programs, where the Rural Finance Authority, we have a partnership or agreement with about 400 participating lenders throughout the state of Minnesota. And under the terms of that contract or participation agreement, the Rural Finance Authority will buy a portion of a real estate loan originated by a lender. The RFA will carry that portion for up to 10 years at a fixed rate of interest. We offer a cash flow advantage to the borrower by giving them the favorable interest rate. The borrower also has greater access to credit because the bank is able to share the credit risk with the state of Minnesota, with the authority, versus carrying the credit all on their own. The five programs that are funded with general obligation bonds are the Basic and Seller Assisted Loan Program, the Ag Improvement Loan Program, the Livestock Expansion, and the Restructure Program. Those programs have a long history and a long tradition within the Rural Finance Authority, and I'll just talk a little bit about those individually. The second source of funds that the Rural Finance Authority uses is state general fund monies. There are occasions where the state would like to offer some financial assistance to producers or borrowers, and they can do that with greater flexibility by using general fund monies. And then the third program that I'll just highlight for you, Mr. Chairman and members, is the federal tax exempt bond, federal tax exempt funds. These are funds that the state gets. I believe it's about $50 per capita. Typically, the money is used for housing purposes, for cities and counties, for economic development purposes. There is a pool or a dedication of some of those monies specifically targeted toward the development of agricultural resources, and that's what this federal tax exempt bond is. Going back again to the five programs that are funded with general obligation bonds, the Basic and Seller Assisted Loan Program is targeted toward people who intend over time to become a full-time farmer. They're entry-level farmers, are limited experience, they have a limited credit history. The net worth on those individuals can be up to $382,000. The Rural Finance Authority would buy 45% of the loan up to $200,000. There's some other requirements that the legislature has asked in order for those people to participate in that program, and one of them is that they agree to be part of a farm management program for 3 years, and that they also make sure that they actively operate and live and work on that farm. Obviously, the state, I'm sure, doesn't want to finance a farming operation and see it go to someone else. They want to make sure that the benefit is to the person who borrowed the money. The Ag Improvement Loan Program is for an established farmer who maybe wants to upgrade a livestock facility, improve a grain storage facility, manure management, or something along those lines. The net worth is, again, at the same amount of $382,000, and the amount of the loan, again, is 45% up to $200,000.
Mr. Borbom, and members, ask questions as we go if you want. You say on both of these that they have to be the principal operator of the farm. Is there a time period once they get the loan that they have to remain on the farm?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. 10 years is a term of the loan, so we do monitor that. We do require that as long as we have the loan with that borrower for the 10-year term, we ask them to be part of that operation.
And what if they do sell in that 10 years? Are they required to pay back the balance of the loan at sale?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if there is a... If they do exit the farming business or discontinue or somehow don't comply with the requirements, then we ask them to repay the loan.
Okay, thank you.
The Restructure 2 program is a program that has a long history. It was the one that was actually started in 1986. It's designed to help farmers who have a good credit history but are having some cash flow problems, some adversity due to drought or flood or some of those type of events that disrupt your cash flow. The one requirement, obviously, is that they have to have some equity in the real estate in order to refinance their debt, their short-term debt, onto the real estate. And the Rural Finance Authority, again, we will carry 45% of the loan, and that amount would be up to $225,000. And the fifth program, again, all these are funded with general obligation bonds, is a livestock expansion program. Again, they must be a Minnesota resident. At least one of the applicants, again, must be the principal operator of the farm. Net worth at $721,000. The primary loans for this have been pork or hog loans as well as dairy farms. We've seen a lot of activity in those two livestock enterprises in the last 3 years. Switching then to some of the programs, I'm on page 2 of the handout, some of the programs funded by state general fund monies. The first one is a value-added stock loan program, which was passed in early 1994 as a way to help producers acquire equity in a co-op. This is a low-interest loan program. The authority's interest rate on this is at 4%, where the borrower can finance up to 45%, up to $40,000. I believe the loan terms on this are up to 8 years for the duration of the loan. One of the other popular programs that we have available is a methane digester loan program. This was started in 1998. We've had one loan that's been made out of this loan program. This is a a direct loan, zero interest, up to $250,000. These are very high-cost entities to put in a methane digester, $500 per cow, and so you're looking at a significant added cost in order to install these and limited cash flow or benefit for them other than the environmental benefits.
So, Mr. Boerboom, on that, you have a balance of how much in the account?
In that account, actually, Mr. Chairman, we have in one revolving loan account, we have three loan programs that are administered out of that. Both the stock, let's see, I believe it's the stock loan program, the methane digester, and the livestock equipment pilot program. Right now, all three are in one account. There's just shy or just at $2 million in that account. And the board, the Rural Finance Authority, is governed by an 11-member board. They allocate monies to the various loan programs under that $2 million pool.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and to Mr. Boerboom. Have you only received one application over that period of time, or has there been more interest? And then just to follow up with that question, do you anticipate that we're going to see more interest in this in the near future? Those are my two questions.
Mr. Boerboom.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Welty, we've had two formal applications. One is the Hoffman Child one, which was originated back in 1999. We had another application that came to the point where the borrower actually had a health issue. They decided not to pursue the project. I've had two phone calls in the last 6 months where I know of a couple farmers that are submitting applications, and so that would easily occupy $500,000 if those two applications proceeded.
Thank you.
Under the Livestock Equipment Pilot Loan Program, this is a program that was authorized 2 years ago. It was designed to help finance the purchase of livestock equipment. It quite honestly hasn't realized the potential of the activity that we expect, and we're going to see some proposals or some technical changes to that loan program in order to see if we can get some more activity out of that program, but it follows the same model as the others.
Mr. Boerboom, on some of these programs, methane digester, livestock, are all of these in cooperation with our rural bankers, or are some of these standalone RFA programs?
Well, that's a good question, Mr. Chairman. Initially, when we started the participation agreement or the contract that we have with ag lenders, it was by program by program. We're now migrating away from that and doing a generic agreement that encompasses all the loan programs authorized under 41B. So that we're nearly complete with that process, so that currently, the participation agreement will apply to all the programs.
So why do you think some of these aren't being used then? I mean, if the bankers know about them, I mean, that could have been one reason that they're not aware of them out there or working with us. But or is it fairly new that, for example, the livestock pilot loan program is going to be a cooperative effort? Is that just making the transition now, where now with interest rates going up, and obviously that's why we have a bill before us today, we've seen pressures on RFA funds. But apparently a couple programs, we haven't seen that. And
Mr. Chairman, I think the two observations with respect to this program, we had a condition that it be the first purchase of a piece of equipment, and that got to be troubling with some lenders. They would rather, you know, what is the first purchase of equipment? So they're going to ask us to discontinue that. I think the other thing is just the interest rate. Even though we're at 3%, 2 years ago, commercial rates were much more favorable than they are today, and so there just wasn't the incentive to utilize the program. That has changed, though.
Okay.
The third category of source of funds that we use is federal tax-exempt bonds. This is the program that we administer. Is called an Aggie Bond Program. And under this program, the Rural Finance Authority, we essentially sell a tax-exempt bond to a lender. The lender then takes the cash proceeds from the sale of that bond, makes a loan to a beginning farmer, and then the rural finance, then the loan to the beginning farmer, then the Rural Finance Authority will assign the loan back to the lender. So this is a three-way partnership. Our role is to facilitate the transaction. There's no money from the state involved. There's no credit risk from the state involved. It's just simply a process that we go through. It's a fairly extensive process, but the application is very detailed and asks for some of the criteria that determine eligibility of the program. And that has had actually more activity in the last year than we've had in previous years. But again, the benefit is that in order to provide the tax-exempt benefit to the lender, the interest earnings is exempt from federal taxes. In exchange, then they provide a lower interest rate to the farmers. So that's the benefit of the program. Tax-exempt interest earnings for the lender, lower interest rate for the beginning farmer. And then on page 4, it just identifies some of the eligibility requirements for the Agri Bond program. And as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of conditions on that. Cannot have owned more than 30% of the medium-sized farm in a county, so whatever county a borrower is located at, we have the data that can meet or show what that information is. And the other requirement is, again, be part of a farm management program and obviously actively involved in the farming operation. Page 5 of the handout just shows you some of the history. The Minnesota legislature has issued bonding authorization for this program back in 1986. There was really no history or try to determine an estimate of the amount of bond proceeds that it would take. So the legislature authorized $50 million. I began my employment with the agency in 1995, and then in 1996 requested $41 million. And those bond authorizations have typically lasted about 7 or 8 years. There's some special session in 1997 that was due to a tornado that went through southern Minnesota. And then we started the routine of trying to be a little more closely estimate the level of activity, as you can see, in 2000, 2002. And part of that was driven by legislature said that if there's bond authorization that's out there more than 4 years, it gets canceled. And so we started to try to hit that target a little more closely. And looking back this last year, I regret that I tried to do that type of model. The way the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority is actually able to pay back the debt service on the bonds, once the bonds are sold, we take the cash, buy the loan participations. The loan participation or the principal and interest receipts from those participations are deposited into a dedicated account. The Department of Finance annually sweeps that account and uses those proceeds to pay back the debt service on the bonds. And since 1988, we've transferred almost, $124 million back to the debt service fund. So we've got a good history of repaying the debt service fund, and our loan loss has been very minimal. Actually, we started tracking our loan losses in 1992, and we've had 14 losses at $191,000. So it's absolutely amazing to me to see the amount of loan activity we've had and to have that minimal of losses. I think it's a credit to the participating lenders that originate the loans and the diversity of the loan portfolio.
So just Mr. Boerboom, just to be clear, most of these loans are 10-year loans?
Mr. Chairman, we carry them for 10 years. They can be actually amortized up to 30 years on the basic and seller assisted. The idea is that after 10 years, there would be enough equity that the borrower could go back to the bank and simply refinance the balance.
And so as we add money, every time we add money, basically that's going into the pot, comes back, and strengthens the portfolio amount. Is that right? Or do we ever lose this? We keep it, don't we? If we add money this year, 10 years from now, that money should be back?
Mr. Chairman, the model is, and I think, and I appreciate the question, is that the legislature gives the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority, or actually gives the Department of Finance, sells the bonds on our behalf. So the legislature says, go ahead and sell general obligation bonds for purposes of this program. The bonds are sold, the cash is used to buy the participation, and then the principal and interest receipts, the money that comes back in from these loan participations, is put into a dedicated account, and then that money is used to pay back the debt service on the bonds. So there is no revolving account or no ability to make new loans from the receipts of the old bond authorization. It's just that give us authorization, we meet our obligation to pay back the debt service, and then give us new authorization to continue forward.
So they're basically revenue bonds. We have a source to pay them off. And have you ever asked for cash? I mean, if you had cash, then technically you'd have that cash back later. How would that affect your program?
But the three programs that are funded with general fund proceeds, like, again, the methane digester, the stock loan, or the pilot livestock pilot loan program and the value-added stock loan, those are general fund appropriations. And that is an example where the legislature says, here's the money, put the money in an account. It's a revolving account. Money out of the account is used to make the loan participations, and then again the principal interest receipts go into that account for future loans. That's a different model than when the bond proceeds, when we get the monies back from the loan participations on the bond proceeds, it goes specifically to pay back the debt service on the bonds.
All right.
Then on page 6 just gives you a highlight of the summary. You can look through that and see the level of loan activity. And it's interesting, just to call your attention, look at the fiscal year 2004. We closed $4.2 million in loans, and that's, again, when our interest rate was about 4 to 4.5%, and that's what commercial interest rates were. So there was very limited activity in 2004. 2005, we were up to $7 million. And actually, our history has always been about $7 to $8 million has been our history. And so we had an exception in fiscal year 2006 when we had $6 million in loan applications that came in 2 months in April and May last year, and that's why I approached the legislature what I did last year to ask for some help, because we really had a run on our loan activity. Page 7 just shows you the profile of the people that use our program. 10 years ago, it was interesting when I looked at this, the basic and seller assisted program, there were people in their mid-20s, and now we're seeing people that are more toward their early 30s, and I think that's a reflection of the increasing land values and some of the greater challenges that farmers are facing to get into productive agriculture. We have the same age profile if you look at the Aggie Bond program, and then as you get into the restructure program, they're a little bit older yet because of their established farmers. And I'll close in a couple minutes here just to look at, you can see the maps that shows the loan activity in map 1. This is the Aggie Bond as well as the basic and seller assisted. These are all the same eligibility, high concentration of the loans again in south central or southern Minnesota. And then again, if you go to map 2, you can see the Ag Improvement and the Restructure Program respectively. And Mr. Chairman, I'll close with that and answer any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Borboom. I have a question. As I look at the rural financing budget activity sheets, and then I go back and I look, we had a presentation the other day from the Commissioner Hugesson on NextGen. I assume, I guess it doesn't say specifically, but as part of the NextGen, there's an unsecured revolving loan program. Is it expected that that then will be housed once that's funded in NextGen, that will move over then into your portfolio, because it's in 2-7, that's in a different place than yours in the book, as well as there's a loan guarantee pool, and I wonder if that you will also oversee those monies if and when they become part of the budget package.
Mr. Chairman, we would welcome that opportunity to administer those types of loan programs, and I think that would certainly, we've got both the board is an 11-member board, 5 appointed by the governor. There are deed and finance and agriculture, and then there's 6 public members, so we've got a couple lenders. We've got the capacity to handle that.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. You've got the capacity, and the personnel, I assume, would cover that. And is that true? You know, we're looking over the next few years probably with renewable energy and other things coming. There may be a number of opportunities to enhance RFA's ability to make loans out there, and you're confident. I think it's a good place to go. You've got the relationship with the lenders out there. They know about you. You've got a good proven track record. I have never, other than this last year with the funding thing, I haven't seen any major complaints or problems over there. So I think you're doing a good job, and I think it's a good home for a number of these new initiatives being floated around the legislature if they ever become reality.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We actually would look forward to continuing that discussion. And we obviously, I think when we look at the model we've had for the last 20 years, there is room to look at the next generation or the next kind of demand for financing. And I'd probably be looking for some staff to meet that new challenge. The staff that we've got has done the work that they've done, given the, and they've developed a good working relationship by, you know, with the three or four people that we've got. But if we add new initiatives or new programs, I'd be looking for some new talent to help with that.
And Mr. Borboom, if we add a new program to the RFA, is the requirements for loans, which you went through, every loan has a different requirement, a different level of net worth, different interest rates, different this, different that, is that all done statutorily, or does your board and your department by rule or policy put some of that in place and come back for our authority, or is it a combination of both? Or as we develop some of these new programs and loan pools, who develops the language and the criteria for that as we move ahead?
Mr. Chairman, the criteria and the loan eligibility, the loan terms, has largely been developed by the legislature. There is some flexibility that the legislature gives the board with respect to the interest rate that could be charged, and they may say to not exceed 3% or not exceed 4%, so the board has some flexibility to set interest rates. But other than that, all the other loan terms and conditions, eligibility established by the legislature.
Okay. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question or comment, I guess we've talked about this before, is, you know, these are great programs, and I think you and your people are doing a great job on this. My concern is to, you know, I know farmers that by themselves can use, you know, several million dollars in loans, and I understand that it's just part of the total loan, but are we doing anything to try to stimulate more use of these programs, because they really are great programs, and or are we just not getting the word out, or what can we do to increase the participation in some of these good programs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faust, what I have seen over the years is just that the program is very sensitive to interest rates. I think if you look at the interest rate environment today, when we're at, we don't know where we're going to be when bonds are sold. And we may be at 5%, and if commercial interest rates are 8 or 8.5%, that will prompt a significant level of activity. The legislative philosophy toward these programs have been targeted primarily toward beginning or entry-level producers. So it is not designed for all farmers. It's been targeted toward people who need some of financial assistance to get into the business. So I think that's just two of the factors.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie. And to Mr. Borboom, to follow up with that comment that you made at the end, have we looked at the eligibility requirements lately and looked at also the beginning farmer to determine if that eligibility requirement as far as the capital that you can have or your equity, is that too low at this point in time with knowing the size of operations that some beginning farmers are coming into nowadays?
Mr. Borboom.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Welty, I've thought about that question myself, and I've looked at the eligibility requirement is indexed every year. We adjust that by inflation so that farmers aren't penalized for inflated land values or increasing land values. And right now, the eligibility is at $382,000, and yet when you look at page 7, the profile of the farmers that are using our program are primarily at $200,000 or $232,000 net worth. So I think that, quite honestly, we're generous in the net worth requirement, which is total assets minus total liabilities, and I think it still fits.
Mr. Borboom, you mentioned earlier in your presentation that there was some confusion or need to be some clarification on the first buy of equipment language. Is that something we need to do this year? Members, the governor's bill was introduced yesterday. A number of folks signed on to it. You're welcome to sign on to it. It's out there. I don't know the number. I'm the chief author, and I'm just wondering, has any of that language change or suggestions? I confess I haven't read it yet, and maybe Mr. Reinholz knows too. Is there anything with RFA changing some of the criteria language in that bill yet?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there is, and I'd be happy to review that with you or with your staff just to walk through the changes that are in the bill.
So we will be looking at least the chair will, members, and if you all have a chance to review the language in that bill and and the language here, like Representative Welty pointed out, if you think we need to upgrade some of this RFA language, we need to do that because they don't do it. We do it in statute, we learned today. So please keep that in mind as we're moving forward with the budgets. Any other questions? I guess I'd ask you to stay right there. And members, at this time, we'll take up, just because it falls nicely, the bill that's in your packet, as soon as I find it. The chair will move House File 274 for discussion, and recommend it to pass and go to the Committee on Finance with a recommendation to go to bonding. Will be the motion here. Members, what we have in front is a bill that I threw in. As most of you probably are aware, and if you're getting the same emails I am, as of October, out-of-business sign basically went up on the website at Department of Agriculture, and we ran out of funds for the loan programs you see listed in this bill. And so we quickly drafted this up and are trying to actually fast-track this. It moved out of the Senate committee, I believe, last week, and it's their intent in the Senate to try and bring it to the floor next week. I would hope, with discussions with our leadership, that we could do the same and move this bill forward as rapidly as possible so we can get these funds back in there. So in spring loan, it's spring loan time, and bankers are, interest rates are up slightly, and bankers are looking to participate, and I think we need to get this going. A couple of questions I would have, Mr. Boerboom. The governor originally recommended $10 million, and I'm guessing that was recommended thinking that these monies would be available July 1st, and that may cover us. If we, the reason I put 15 in consultation with you folks and others is if we get it out now here beginning of March, that adds 3 or 4 months to activity, and hopefully will get us covered till next year, members, when we come back in a bonding year, and we'd be able to put some of this this monies for. So the first question I'd have is, are we comfortable with that? We don't want to see another, you know, out of business sign go up at the end of the year here, and I know you're speculating like the rest of us on this, but I have had letters and members, I don't know if you've gotten the same notes, but some bankers are writing saying we'd like to see more than $15 million in there, and I guess, members, it's kind of up to us to look at it. These are unique loans in that they're revenue bonds, so they're paid off. They don't count against our loan portfolio overall and the state general obligation bonds, so they're not counted the same, so we can, you know, we can kind of assign a number, or the bonding committee can with us, and it also doesn't take a supermajority to pass this bill on the House floor because of the type of bonds they are. So with all that as a background, I guess we're asking for your advice on that number to make sure we get to feasibly next July when we'll be done and the bonding bill will be out and signed by the governor.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your efforts on the bill. And that's exactly the thinking that we had with the governor's office with the $10 million versus some other number. I think looking at the experience that we had last year in fiscal year 2006 at $13 million, we are in the same interest rate environment today that we were a year ago, and that there will be significant demand for the loan programs because of the favorable interest rates. And I'm expecting a 3% discount on our interest rates versus what you might see in the commercial sector. I think one of the other drivers in 2006 is that we did have some profitability in the livestock enterprise, that farmers were on a waiting list trying to make some of those decisions when to go ahead and make some of those building improvements. They went ahead and did that. This year, however, I think we're going to see more demand for the restructure program because of lenders that are not able to make the farm operation cash flow. They've had some trouble with drought or something like that. So every year is different. I think in my judgment, the $15 million will get us through the year, but we will be back next year again asking for additional authorization.
Okay. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that I would agree with you that
$15 million may not be enough. Last year we did 13, and if we look at total farmer loans, it was almost 15. And we've got some pent-up demand for the last 3-4 months where people have been waiting to apply for loans that haven't been able to. So I'm not sure that 15 would be enough.
Mr. Ernest, you joined us. Do you have something to add?
Oh,
you getting excited about something?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that technically these are general obligation bonds.
Right.
They're not revenue bonds. We wouldn't get as good a rate with revenue bonds. And I believe because they're general obligation bonds, they do follow the regular requirements for the bonds.
Mr. Ernest, I've been told by numerous people last couple of weeks that they do not.
Correct.
Both in the Senate and the House. Mr. Borboom.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Tell me if the chair is correct or not.
Mr. Chairman, you are correct.
Thank you. So they are a little different members. They're general GO bonds, but they're not counted the same, and they're a different mechanism for payback, and for some reason they don't take the two-thirds vote that the others do. So. But if that's a problem, we'll let you know before we get to the floor. Because members on both sides aisle, in all sincerity, this is not the omnibus bonding bill if we bring it. I think all of us are aware that we need to get this out and get it to our lenders and get it in their hands. And, I don't mind monkeying around with bills. I certainly did enough of it in both the majority and the minority. But I would hope that members, at least on the Ag Committee, when we're in caucus, would plead with our members on both sides that, you know, this isn't a fix-up bill or it isn't the omnibus bonding bill, and we'll have opportunities to do that later. I know it's like a broken record, but, we'll hope the Ag Committee can do things a little different maybe. We'll see. I don't know if I'm going to have any luck with anyone. I don't know about you guys, but... So I have a couple people want to testify. If they're here, John Apitz and Apitz. And David Skillbred. And perhaps as you folks come down representing the lending community, maybe you can tell us how you use these loans, what would typically happen if a farmer walked into a bank, and what would the banker be looking at, what kind of structure, or what percent of their loan, if you know, goes towards this, and how does it help out your lenders to have this program out there? Mr. Apitz.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Apitz. I apologize for my frogginess here. I am with the law firm of Messer, William & Kramer, and we represent Farm Credit Services at the Minnesota Legislature. Just a quick bit of background about who we are. First of all, it's a pleasure to support your bill, Mr. Chairman. We hope this moves forward quickly. Farm Credit Services is a federally chartered agricultural lending entity that's cooperatively owned by its borrower members. So it's a cooperative that lends money to farmers and some agricultural businesses. By federal law, we're mandated to provide service to lend in every state and every county of the nation. And we provide that through a series of offices that are located around the state of Minnesota. There's one called AgStar for folks in southern and western Minnesota, Ag Country, which is out in the Moorhead area, Farm Credit Services of Grand Forks, which is up in the northwest, and Farm Credit Services of Minn Valley or Minnesota Valley, which is located out in Wilmer. We've got about 30,000 borrowers. We do about $3 billion or have about $3 billion in assets right now. So it's a substantial lending entity. I'm here because I've been here for about 20 years. Farm Credit first got involved in legislative activity about 20 years ago when we were in the middle of one serious farm crisis in the state. And we have done some amazing things to recover, not the least of which was to implement the Rural Finance Authority. We've been originators, Farm Credit has been originators of RFA loans for almost probably since its inception. And mainly we use this, Mr. Chairman, to your question, for young and beginning farmers. There's a number of programs that you've seen, but young and beginning farmers is the place that we kind of focus most of our attention. and what happens, essentially, is you'll have a young or a beginning farmer come into the office, and they're basically unable to meet the lending requirements, the repayment requirements, essentially, that might be in place, because the interest rate, as Mr. Borblum was talking about, might be somewhat higher than is typically than they're typically able to repay with. And what happens is the RFA program comes in. Because the state uses its borrowing power to go get money, which it then participates with us in, or David's organizations, the interest rate, the overall interest rate on the loan can be reduced. You can drop it down 2-3% is common, and that is oftentimes enough to make the margin. especially if there's a limited amount of equity or there's questions about repayment ability. Actually, Mr. Chairman, the out-of-business sign went up in July of last year. It wasn't October, it was July of last year. They ran out of money shortly after the legislative session, and it's not to any fault that should be laid at the Department of Agriculture's desk. There was a run on this program, and bless it that it was there, but a run on this program in late out six and early out six, such that the resources, when they realized that we had about 2-3 days of session left to go, and that we were just not able to put together some additional lending. Let me give you a quick idea of how that worked for Farm Credit Services. In 2005, Farm Credit Services in Minnesota made about 30 RFA loans, participation loans, for roughly $3 million. In 2006, we were able to do about 21 loans for about $2.2 million. Not for lack of applicants, because there's applicants still there. There's people who need these resources, and they're waiting, as you said, Mr. Chairman, with the planting season coming up here. Mr. Chairman, let me just reiterate what you said. This is a good program. This is a bipartisan program and a good bill. These bonds are repaid from the borrowers and that take them out. And the beauty of that is that, number one, we help get some young and beginning farmers started, but number two, we can use the state's borrowing power to reduce the cost of agricultural operations here. But we need some quick action on this bill. I understand there was some conversation about using cash for this program earlier. That, forgive me, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And it seems to be rather inconsistent with the way the program has run for the last 20 years. They borrow the money as they need it. The Department of Finance can let bonds as they have applications available. They lend the money out. The money comes back to the state of Minnesota as it's repaid. And so I suggest to you, moving this bill forward, it has to arise in the House. It is a bonding bill, and so it needs to arise over here. As you said, the Senate has taken its action, moved out of Ag Committee, moved to Finance Committee. Hopefully Finance moves fairly quickly. But if you can speed yours on the way, you can catch them and make this available, hopefully, to young and beginning farmers here in the state of Minnesota. I don't know if I covered all your questions, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine. We'll let Mr. Stilbert try his hand at it, too. And yeah, the Senate does take it up next week, and our bill isn't there. Members, what they will typically do is just lay it on the table over there, wait for our bill, and then attach theirs to ours and move it on. So, Mr. Skillbred.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Skillbred. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations for the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. Glad to be here today to support House File 274. First of all, the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota is a statewide association of independently held, community-focused commercial banks. While our members provide services in rural, suburban, and inner-city communities, about 80% of our members are in greater Minnesota. And knowing that, ag lending is a top priority for our banks, and we're a leading lender for ag loans, and very happy to be a participant in the RFA programs. With respect to that leading lender, I was looking at an Economic Research Service report of the USDA the other day, and according to that, in 2002, commercial banks such as mine were the leading ag lender in the United States with roughly 40% of all loans outstanding. With respect to the bill before you, I'd like to also just confirm and echo the sentiment of the members and Mr. Appetz that we fast-tracked this bill last fall in preparation for the 07 session. I surveyed my members on a number of issues, and one of them that I asked a few questions about was the RFA program. And according to my results, unofficial, unscientific as I admit them to be, of the RFA lenders who took my survey, 30% of those responded by saying that eligible customers for these loan programs were waiting or changing plans. So I think that is in parallel to the statistics that Assistant Commissioner Bauerboom gave you on the utilization and demand for these loans, and that there is some pent-up need and customers out there that would like to pursue these once we get them rolling again. Mr. Chairman, you asked in your beginning comments how we might make sure that a lack of funding doesn't exist again for these programs, and I would just like to highlight one comment that Assistant Commissioner Bauerboom made in his testimony. In the old days, so to speak, when this program was first done, the bonding authorization by the legislature was much more significant than it is today. The RFA and finance, as I understand this, do not need to sell all of the $15 million, if that's the number that you should choose to pass this year. They dole it out in segments as they see the need for it for two reasons. Well, one primary reason. Number one, they don't want to have to pay interest on bonds that are not getting the investment from the farmers. So in the old days, the appropriation or the authority provided to them was much greater than the immediate need, and then it was up to them to utilize the bonding authority that they anticipated. And in that sort of situation, then, if demand is higher than anticipated, they've got some leftover bonds that they can utilize and sell in order to meet that higher demand, rather than have to tell applicants that we're out of funds, we'll have to wait for a new authorization. It's maybe something that you don't want to consider immediately and consider this session, but down the road, perhaps that's an issue that you'd like to revisit. That's all I have to say, Mr. Chairman. Again, very happy to be here and support this program. And finally, just to say that my lenders, when we talk about the RFA, they're very, very high on the program and the staff. It works very, very well, so I want to mention that as well. Thank you.
Mr. Skillbred or Mr. Apitz, any opinion on the $15 million versus a higher amount, say 20, or like you just brought up, the bonds don't have to be let. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but what's your comfort level on that, getting us to next July or June or whenever our next bonding bill is actually signed and ready to go? Either of you.
I think we'll both answer that.
Okay.
Let me just give you a context real quickly that I think would make that decision a little bit easier. This doesn't count against your 3% general fund limit for the amount of bonding that you can do. Okay? And it is a revenue bond, so it's paid back, not from the general fund, even though it is a general fund obligation overall. And as David said, it's used as it's needed. When this thing was originally set up, I think it was about $48 or $50 million that Mr. Bierboom said was authorized. And they didn't come back here for about 8 years. They didn't need to because they had the resources. $15 million is the lower end of what you ought to take a shot at this, Mr. Chairman. I think give him $50 million. It doesn't count against your ceilings, and it isn't going to impact you in any adverse way. And I think you may not have the problem that we're going to run into in coming back here again next year. Number one, number two, if interest rates do continue to go up, that 15 could be used up quite quickly. So you've got every reason to add a bit more, I think.
Mr. Skillbred?
I think that generally I'd agree with those comments. There's a lot of oversight on this program and on these activities, so I think that given that you're not going to create any sort of problem by authorizing more than is needed, but if you happen to authorize less than is needed, then we're going to be in the same circumstance that we're in here today.
Could I have one last comment, Mr. Chairman, to Representative Welty's question about the net worth limits that are in the bill. About 4 or 5 years ago, we did have some problems reaching various borrowers who had net worth limits that maxed out against the statutory maximums. And so the legislature, you all, sat down, studied that. We brought a proposal that basically said, let's do, as Mr. Beerbohm is suggesting, adjust it for inflation, adjust it for CPI, whatever figure he uses, and made that change 4 or 5 years ago. So to the point about, are we able to reach people that otherwise were restricted in the program, the answer is yes. And with the dollars that are available, we can certainly assure that we're able to do that.
Okay. Thank you. Other testifiers. Comes one, either for or against. The members are, new members are going to need all the banking lobbyists today, so you get to know them. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Steve Johnson, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Bankers Association. Here in support of House File 274, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for offering this bill. I won't repeat a lot of the testimony you heard here. It's very similar. Just briefly, the MBA, the Minnesota Bankers Association, represents about 95% of the banks in Minnesota, both large and small. So most of the banks in your area are members of our trade association. And through our Ag Committee, which looks at agricultural issues, and through our Government Relations Council, we strongly support the efforts of the RFA, the programs of the RFA, and support, as I mentioned, this bill. And it is... I think we do need to move it along as quickly as possible due to the planting season and the other seasons and the pent-up demand. And our bankers, just in general, are looking for, always looking for things in their toolbox to offer programs to their customers, both federal and state. And this has been a fantastic program working with the Department of Agriculture through the RFA and the various folks. So. And I'll just make a comment to the point, too. I'm sure I'll be asked about the $15 million. I think Representative Faust was kind of hitting on it. I mean, if we already have a pent-up demand, $15 is great, but maybe we need to go beyond that. I don't have a magical number in my head, but it's something to think about. So,
okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Any
Chairman.
Any questions?
Members.
Any member? Thank you very much. Anyone else in the audience wants to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, it's back to us, members. I guess I'm inclined to increase that number at this point. I don't know what you folks think. Representative Faust, you talked about it. Representative Appetz thought we ought to throw $50 million in there and take over the bonding committee and see what they think. We're comfortable doing that. I'd do that, or I would suggest at least doubling it, maybe to 30. I don't know if there's a sense from the committee or not where you want to go. Representative Faust, you want to offer an amendment to this bill?
I guess I'd offer an amendment to make it $25
million. Okay. Representative Faust moves to amend on line 1.6, change the 15 to 25, and on line 1.22, do the same thing, change the 15 to 25. Our staff over there, is that the two changes? Okay. Everyone has that amendment. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in... I'm listening to Mr. Appet's comments. He threw out the $50 million number. I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, can you help me with this? This goes to the bonding committee, and they'll ultimately decide the number?
Well, Representative Finstead, since it's bonding, it will be reviewed by the bonding committee, and ultimately our banker friends and Mr. Boerboom and myself will be over there trying to convince them of our number and why. I think we've got a good argument for raising it. Again, doesn't go against our limits. Is basically a revenue bond, even though it's backed up by general obligation, and doesn't take a supermajority on the floor to pass, and they don't have to let the bonds until they need them. So, I mean, it's really, I guess it's kind of a no-brainer to me, but I guess I'm just questioning the level where we should be. Representative Finstead.
Yeah, to that point, Mr. Chair, then Representative Faust, maybe 25 would be just, negotiating 101. Maybe we ask for a little bit more than that if that's the number we would like to get to. And maybe if you could think about increasing that number a little bit, and then maybe we could shoot for a better number at the end. That would be my advice.
Mr. Faust, maybe you want to go for that 50.
All right, we'll change it to 50 million and see what happens.
And defend that number with us. So, members, change 1.6 and 1.22 to $50 million. Isn't this fun?
Fun.
All right. Members, any questions to that? All those in favor of the Faust Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That amendment's adopted. We're to the bill. Any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, members, I renew my motion that House File Number 274 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Committee on Finance with a recommendation to go to bonding. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That bill is passed. Thank you for that, members. We will now proceed to our first ever from the department this year overhead production. Members are going to go back to our budget books and listen to the Plant Protection Division give us some information on what they do and what their budget requests are.
No.
As soon as you're set up and ready to go, we'll let you proceed in any way you wish. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, this division is found on page 17 of the budget book.
Page 17, members, of your budget book is where we're starting.
Page 17 has a description of the program, and then on page 19 there are the numbers. I would just briefly state, kind of tell you that they're about half and half fees and general fund, a little heavily, more heavily toward the fees. They have five active fee accounts, which Mr. Friso will go over, but it's seed potato, fruit and vegetable, apiary, nursery, phytosanitary, and seed regulatory. They also get four grants from the federal government. That's about $1 million a year.
And for members, yesterday, if you're in ag policy, you saw in your packet a report from the department on the agriculture fund. We're going to get that over here and put it in your books, in your binders, so you have it next time. But basically, it's a report on all the fees in the agriculture fund that was provided, and I think that's helpful information for us. So hopefully by tomorrow, you'll have that in your books for your review as we go through these different accounts over the next month, too. Welcome. Introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Geer Friso. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I have passed around copies, black and white copies of my PowerPoint, so you should have those as well. So I'm just going to go through very briefly our division. This is a relatively new division that was created about a year ago, and it was created from three units from the former grain division and then also from the plant protection section of the agronomy and plant protection division. And our primary division responsibilities are focused on plant pest exclusion and management, pest survey for both endemic and exotic pests, and then crop and commodity inspection and certification for both exports and imports. As Mr. Ernest already kind of described, this is the overall picture of the division. Our general funds is slightly over $2 million. The agricultural fund or dedicated or fees is about 2.6. And then we get federal grants roughly in the neighborhood of about $1 million. First, I'll go through very briefly some of our dedicated accounts. We have a seed inspection program that is about a $760,000 program. We inspect about 8,000 seed dealers and 500 labelers, make sure that the seed that farmers and growers buy meets certain standards and that the seed labels are correct and accurate. We have a fruit and vegetable inspection program at about $700,000. This is very much a fee-for-service program. We inspect about 25 million pounds of fruits and vegetables that we certify every year. And there's about 5 million pounds of fruits and vegetables that we certify for export to Canada alone. This program had a very recent fee increase. That fee increase is required by our agreement with the federal government, which we have to match whatever the fee schedule the feds put in place. So when they raise the fee, we are required to raise our fees. We have an export certification program. That's about $130,000 program. This is primarily for the international market. We issue about 3,000 certificates every year, and those are for commodities go to about 65 countries throughout the world. It again is very much a fee-for-service program, and this is a relatively new dedicated account that came into being. We have a seed potato program. Minnesota is a very large seed potato producing state. We're third or fourth largest in the country. There's 15 seed states in the country. We certify about 9,000 acres every year. We have a very small, at least it's small now, apiary inspection program. It's primarily focused on requests for export certificates, and this is really for if another state, if bees or colonies are coming from Minnesota and going to other states for pollination purposes or something, we provide that service. Again, it's a fee-for-service program. The regular inspection program was removed last year at the request of the apiary community. We have a very large and growing nursery inspection program. This is
about excuse me, Mr. Friesel. Not paying attention. Representative Magel.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Friesel, I recently read some articles in the paper that talked about the bee situation, and they seem to be getting some kind of a disease that looks like a buildup of diseases. Could you comment on that and what effect that you see having this having on Minnesota's apiary industry?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, that's correct. The apiary community has been faced with a number of new parasites within the last several years. There's two very destructive mites, the tracheal mite and a varroa mite, and recently there's a new beetle called small hive beetle. But beyond that, they have been noticing an unexplained collapse of colonies, which are not necessarily associated with these parasites, and it has not really been completely identified what is happening to those colonies. But they are very much, the industry is very highly stressed right now by the loss of colonies, and this is especially problematic for crops that depend on bees for pollination, and especially almond and some of the southern crop growers.
Okay,
moving on, the nursery inspection program. This is another program that we had a fee increase with industry support about 3 years ago. We inspect about 300 nursery growers and about 2,600 nursery dealers. As I said, this is a up and growing program, and we have worked very closely with this group. We maintain a grain inspection program in Duluth at about $500,000. This is a program that is slated to cease operations April 2nd of this year.
And Mr. Friesel and Mr. Ernest, is that described on one of the pages here? Can you tell us where we're at in the book? Members, that's one that I have an interest in, and other members have expressed an interest in, so that's why I'm asking. Where does that show up in your budget book?
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a detailed description of the grain inspection program in. It's part of this division.
So, is you say you're discontinuing it, so there'll be a savings. Where are those numbers reflected in the budget?
Mr. Chairman, we do have a dedicated account in the agricultural fund for that activity. When that gets put in the budget books, you'll see how much they've been bringing in the past, and as it ramps down and is closed out for numbers.
Is it reflected in the overall agricultural fund numbers in here, or?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll see if they're show up. Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Ernst. On that point, the employees that are doing the grain inspection, what happens to them? Are they being laid off? Are they retiring? Are they being transferred?
Mr. Preso.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, there are four full-time employees at that office. There's one of them is very close to retirement and will probably take retirement. The other ones, some of them have an opportunity to bump into other state positions. We are looking into the possibility of offering some positions within the invasive species program to those that have an interest in those northern areas. So.
Representative Hans.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up then, so there could be a cost here. Let's say you pay the retirement or the accumulated vacation or sick leave for the employees if they're laid off or if they're retiring, that the cost savings could maybe be negated by the unfunded liability with the particular employees.
Mr. Friesel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's true. We have run through some estimates of those costs. I think we ran a worst-case scenario. I think we came up with about a $95,000 cost if those employees all were laid off and did not take other state service options.
Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What if the bill doesn't pass? I mean, there's a bill out there that says this will end, but what if that bill doesn't pass? I hear a lot of things from the people in Duluth that they want to continue this inspection. I think I've had only those kinds of letters coming from me, so I'm curious about that.
Mr. Friesel, do you just quit collecting fees by executive order and the money's gone and they're done April 2nd, or is this an authority that we have to give within our bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tremba, this is a program that we do on behalf of USDA GPSA, so it's a delegated authority. So the program has lost an average of about, I think it's $125,000 a year for the last 3 years, so it's been losing a lot of money. We've reduced staff as much as we can. We've increased fees as much as we can. But we're required to give notice back to the federal government if we're returning the program to USDA, and then USDA GPSA will take over those inspection activities. And that's what they have indicated to us, is that beginning April 2nd, USDA GPSA will provide those services.
Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I was up there not too long ago looking at those authorities, and the concern was not only the money, it is your concern, but they were concerned about the fact that that was a port that was possibly suspect for potential with the 9/11 kind of thing. But they're very concerned about that. And so how do you weigh that piece with the dollars if that would happen?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tremba, we don't have any direct responsibility as far as security does, but I do appreciate your point. The inspection service, is important to remember, will continue. They will simply continue under federal jurisdiction or authorities. So they will be maintaining that piece. The level of commerce that goes through that program has declined year after year after year. It has gone from 400 ships a year to about 37 ships last year. So each year, it's declining, and we have done everything humanly possible to reduce our expenses, to increase revenue, to try and meet those needs. But the fact is, the program is continues to lose money.
You done for now?
For now.
Thank you. I represent Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and to Mr. Friesel. I just want to be guaranteed that we're not going to be losing any ability to ship our commodities out of the port. And as I understand it, how you've described it, essentially the state's giving up its authority to inspect, and now that's being handed over to the USDA, so they'll be assuming all costs and then also the responsibility to do the inspections. Am I correct on that?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, that's correct. And we have had a number of discussions and meetings with USDA. They have assured us in the strongest terms that they will assure that there is adequate level of inspection at the port. I would also point out that Minnesota is not unique in this decision. There is probably 4 or 5 states left that provide this service, and it's simply because the cost of for state government to provide this service is much greater, frankly, than what it can be done in the private sector.
Representative Welton.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie. And to a follow-up, Mr. Friso, so you can guarantee me that we will not have any repercussions from world buyers of our commodities because there will continue to be inspections.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, those are the assurances that we have received from USDA GIPSA.
Thank you.
Representative Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be quick. The grain inspectors currently, they have authority to board foreign flag vessels. Is that correct?
Mr. Friesel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, I believe that's correct, but I'm not an authority on some of those details.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so a ship comes in that's international shipping, it loads up with grain, or it's bringing coal in, and then grain goes out, or grain comes in and taconite goes out. These Minnesota state employees can go on the boat and check that grain for quality, correct? And I believe they also, Minnesota state employees, can go on a ship and check if there's been fumigation of grain as well. I seem to remember that.
Sir Priest.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, you may be correct. I'm not absolutely certain if that's true on the fumigation side, but I suspect you're correct. I would have to check and get back with you, though.
Representative Hans.
Mr. Chair, I'm just thinking about potential retraining opportunities that perhaps if we're if state employees already have the authority to board and there is no more shipping, perhaps ballast water is a concern, and there could be retraining for inspection there. So I just want to raise that. If there's existing authority for boarding such vessels, there may be an opportunity here.
Mr. Priest, how many employees are affected?
Mr. Chair, there's 4 full-time employees.
And members, this is something we'll revisit at some time when we're putting the budget together with suggestions from you all on what you think. I will tell you the Duluth delegation has expressed concern, as well as the wheat growers and some of our small grain groups who have been in my office, as well as the Port Authority in Duluth, at the loss of these jobs and these inspectors that are right there in Duluth rather than having to rely on the USDA to cover it. So, Mr. Friso, I think it's a topic we're going to need to explore a little more as a committee and see what we can do to maybe address some of these issues.
Yeah, just one quick question.
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, just one quick question. Mr. Friso, do you think quality control will slip in any way, shape, or form by making these changes?
Mr. Friso.
Chair, Representative Hamilton, I do not believe so. At least that's the assurance we've received from the federal inspectors. The federal USDA inspectors have taken over many other state programs, and our understanding is the programs function very well and that the importing countries are satisfied with those services.
And Mr. Friso, are you done, Representative Hamilton? Mr. Friso, on the funding end of it, where does the funding come for this? Has the funding dropped off because of lack of inspections and it's a fee per inspection, or has the USDA decreased and or been flat in their funding? Where's the problem lying for the funding, the gap you talk about of $125,000?
Mr. Chair, I think it's a case of on both sides of the equation for both expenses and revenue. We have to get permission or approval from USDA for our fees. We tried a year ago to get the maximum fee we could, and the maximum fee that they would approve is 25% increase. However, beyond that, if you go even beyond that, then there's the risk of losing those business folks. The other side of the equation, we have tried to keep staff down to the very lowest possible amount, but we have 4 full-time, but then we rely on about a half dozen or so intermittent employees. The difficulty is you have wide fluctuations in inspection activities, and you need a lot of people in a very narrow point of time, and it takes a certain amount of expertise to provide that inspection. And so it's always, we try to keep our expenses down to the bare minimum, but we're down to the point where we just don't think we can get any smaller and still provide the service. And we've also maximized the revenue as much as we can, and the program is still continuing to lose money.
And Mr. Friesel, you said you're at where you think you need to be on inspection fees to keep you competitive. Have you charted other ports and other fees? Do we have an idea of what inspection fees are in other Great Lake ports, for example? Or I don't know if they do it on the river or not. Obviously, ocean-going ships are a concern. But
Mr. Chair, you raise a good point. Wisconsin does have an inspection program located in Superior. I'm not sure what their fee structure is. I'm guessing it's very similar to ours, but I would have to double-check the exact amount.
Mr. Friesel, and maybe in conjunction with Mr. Reinholz over there, who is paying meticulous attention to this, we can understand what some of the fees are around the Great Lakes ports, not just Wisconsin, but the other ports, too. If we can make a couple calls and get that back to the committee in the next week or two, or back to our fiscal analysts, that would be very, very helpful. Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Help me with this. You said that you have to go to the USDA to raise your fees. So they said they didn't want to raise them to the extent that you wanted them. So is that a way for them to get the USDA contract so that they can have that? It seems I don't hear really good stories with USDA. They're not inspecting everything, and with the budgets being cut, they're actually randomly checking. And fewer and fewer. And I think that's a concern that I have in Minnesota, is that same thing would happen, because that's kind of the reputation that they've gotten since the budgets have been cut. And so we also then would have fewer inspections. And having been up there and seeing all of the different countries that are coming in with their grains, I was amazed at the number of and which countries were, and if they're just randomly inspecting and less inspections, I'm not sure it bodes well for Minnesota and our citizens.
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Trumba, I can only pass on what was the assurances we received from USDA that they would provide adequate services. That said, my expectation is they may enter into negotiations with the Superior Inspection and possibly contract for services with them or with a private entity, but they would still have to report back to USDA as the overseeing authority.
Representative Tremba.
Well, that answers a little bit of my questions. They just want one port authority instead of two.
I think Representative Tremba makes a good point, members, and something we need to continue to look into. Again, if they're going to contract out to someone anyway, or Wisconsin, you know, and you talked about there's at least one of those four that are off to early retirement. Maybe there's some middle ground here where, you know, one or two of the four are on their way out, and we keep at least our own minimal staff there for our own inspections. I'm just thinking out loud. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and to Mr. Friesel. Have you checked with any of the other states that have gone to the USDA inspections to find out from them if they have seen a drop in the quality of inspections, or if they have had concerns raised to them by any of the interested parties? Has the state actually checked with the other states to find out this answer?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, we have had some discussions. There, I would say that the responses we've gotten has been mixed. In some cases, they said that the service provided was equal to or better than what the state. There were a couple of ports where they felt that the service provided by USDA was either less good or that it was more expensive than what the state was providing. But I could do a quick survey for you and try and put together some make some better comparisons.
Thank you, Mr. Friesen.
Well,
Chairman Junkie, if we are going to take this issue up again for further discussion, I think that it would be, I think it's needed that the state gains that information and reports back, and that we can weigh that then in making our decision. Because, you know, I can see your point. If this isn't cost effective, we're losing revenue, then why do we continue it if the USDA is going to provide the same level of service, if we can guarantee that that same level of service is going to be provided? But since we already have states that have gone to this, I think that we should check with them, find out what their concerns were, and make sure that if we are going to move to this, that our quality is not put into any jeopardy whatsoever. Thank you.
And Colby, maybe you can help us follow up on that. Are you paying attention? We're sure you are. We want to understand with the department other states that have gone the USDA route and discontinued a few calls to some legislative bodies or departments on what they think the quality of the inspections were. Were they maintained? Did they increase, decrease? Just some overall viewpoints would be... Well, and Mr. Reinholtz is going to do the fees at other ports, too. We're giving you both assignments, so you're not just sitting around your offices not doing anything the next couple of days. So, members and Mr. Friso, we have a long way to go yet, and I appreciate, number one, your color pictures. I'm a picture guy. I like that. So thank you for that. Mr. Ernst, I'm sure the following years you're going to be thinking really intently on how you can spruce up that fiscal presentation with slides. I'm sure that'll be on top of your agenda. Members, tomorrow we're going to take up three tax bills and hopefully get them over to the tax committee, and then we will continue with our plant protection. I assume you're available tomorrow to continue along?
Mr. Chair, with regret, I am not available tomorrow. Uh-oh. I have to be in Indianapolis, but I will be back on Thursday.
Next week. All right. We'll get someone else, hopefully with just as good a slides as you have in here. So, members, with that, is there any more business before the committee? Seeing none, thank you for your attendance. We are adjourned.